The factors that I would identify would be the following. One is, I think, a profound sense of homelessness that a lot of Americans feel. And this is something I do discuss in my book for a couple of reasons. One is a feeling that their communities are being overwhelmed by people of a different color and a different culture. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing a backlash to that. I go to the grocery store and somebody's speaking Spanish or is wearing a head cover. That's one, you know, I think, trend that was part of this. The second is a sense of homelessness that comes from, I'm working in an office. There's now a robot threatening my job. You know, there's now software that's eating away at another part of it. And a sense that the two things that anchor you in the world, your community and your workplace, are somehow in play.
The only thing that I spend more time reading about than politics would definitely be economics. And I've got my favorite economists, Robert Reich, Ravi Batra, and Thomas Friedman. And Thomas Friedman is a good one, but one of the more interesting ones. I've got a few more clips from him. We'll get to that in just a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 193. Thank you so much for being here. I am glad to be here as well.
The worst of it, I think, was what Van Jones on CNN called a white lash. A backlash against 8 years of our first African-American president. And I think that ugliness was also part of it. And I think another part of it, Tavis, honestly, is just a kind of debasement of our culture, a fascination with a TV personality, someone who lives the life of the rich and famous, that was also an allure to people. And also, I think there was an element of, what the hell? What do we have to lose? Let's shake up the game board. These guys haven't done so well. So even though Trump has said and done all of these noxious things, let's give it a ride.
Let's unpack some of these ideas, shall we? Now, we all have the basic need to identify with somebody, identify with a group, whether that be family or coworkers or other folks who have a similar interest. We all have the need to identify and belong. A good place to identify and belong with other people are similar interests. Say your interests are running or painting or playing music. Of course, I'm going right to art. Those are great interests to have. Similar economic interests. You, whoever you are, at the other end of this microphone, listening to me through your headphones or the speakers in your house. Yeah, you and I have the same economic interests. We share that. We've never met each other, but we definitely have that. Where's a bad place where you should not identify with? I only like white people. That's not a good... I only want to be around this kind of... I only like liberals. I only like conservatives. That's... Whoa. Now, to want to be around people that are of the same political stripe as you, fine. But to say only... Anytime you're saying only, you're closing in those walls around you. You know, you're limiting yourself. You're limiting your ideas. You're not the horizon. There's so much on the horizon, and you don't get to be a part of any of it. You're hurting yourself, and you lose. One of the other things that was pointed out by Thomas Friedman is this whole idea of, you know what? He's a celebrity, a reality TV. Okay. One of the things that Obama was just eviscerated for by conservatives was the fact that he was so great in front of a crowd. There was none more than a celebrity. He's got no idea, just a dang old celebrity. Y'all are just love a celebrity. Now, what the hell is this guy? This guy is nothing but a reality television star. No. You can't do that, Mel. He's a businessman as well. Yeah, but from what I've heard, most of his business deals have not been all that great. And as a matter of fact, according to tax filings roughly 20 years ago, he managed to lose $983 million in a single year. That doesn't sound that great. And another point, how about it's time to shake it up, right? So you send Democrats to Congress, send them to D.C., and they don't do that great. You know, they don't seem to really stand up for the people. So you send Republicans, and they're really just the wrecking crew. So you got the ineffective Democrats and the wrecking crew of the Republicans, and people go, you know what? And this is where Friedman is correct. Hey, you know what? Let's just shake it up. Hold on. Let's take that idea for a minute. Have you ever shaken anything up and had it turn out better? Couple of examples. Shaking a baby. There are PSAs telling you, don't shake babies. It's very bad to shake babies. Okay, how about a can of soda? Shake up a can of soda. Is that soda better than it was before you shook it up? No, chances are it's going to explode in your face. How about earthquakes? When earthquakes shake things up, that makes life a lot better, doesn't it? Always with the earthquakes. I find myself sometimes sitting around with me and my liberal friends going, man, I sure wish we had an earthquake to destroy a lot of property. No, no. Shaking things up is never a good way to get things done. So why are we obsessed with the idea of shaking things up? My answer, pure frustration. That's all it is. Yeah, we've got two largely ineffective parties, and I'm not going to defend either one of them here. Two largely ineffective parties. You know, or Democrats are ineffective and Republicans are just straight out destroying stuff. But the point of them destroying stuff is so that you'll look at government and say, we got that, no government, just put it into private hands. It's where it should be anyway. What about when private hands destroy things? Well, that's okay, because it's private hands destroying things. At least it's not the dang gum government. And there's the other problem. We separate ourselves and we say that we are not the government. BS. We are. You don't realize it, but we are. And there's no reason why we shouldn't see ourselves that way.
My personal politics, Tavis, is I'm actually on some issues, I am to the left of Bernie Sanders. I believe we should have single-payer health care system. Mm-hmm. I believe that as the world gets this fast, we need to strengthen all of our safety nets. And we need to enable and empower and inspire every American to do lifelong learning, because the new social contract is that you can have a lifelong job, but only if you are a lifelong learner. But on other issues, quite frankly, I'm to the right of the Wall Street Journal editorial page. That is, I'm for eliminating all corporate taxes and replacing them with a carbon tax, a tax on sugar, a tax on bullets, and a small financial transaction tax. I want to get radically entrepreneurial over here to unleash everyone's economic potential to pay for the safety nets I think we're going to need over here as the world becomes too fast for some people, and I don't want to leave them behind.
Thomas Friedman is truly a radical thinker. Let's unpack that for just a moment. To get rid of all corporate taxes and replace it with a sugar tax, we consume a lot of sugar in America, and it leads to a lot of health problems, and it costs us a ton of money. A tax on bullets. We love murdering people in the United States. You know what? I've never read any studies, you know, for putting taxes on these particular things, how it would turn out. But it's an idea that I would be willing to try, because you would no longer have corporations, these dang gum taxes, which they really don't get to say right now anyway, because a lot of them, Exxon, GE, Apple among them, already aren't paying their taxes, and as a matter of fact, are actually getting a rebate back at the end of the year for simply coming into our economy and taking whatever the hell they want without paying for it. So if the headline was that there's no corporate taxes, and then we had, say, a tax on, you know, sugar, bullets, some of these other things he's talking about, then that actually sounds like it might work out. But once again, we would need a study to prove whether or not that is true. So this is not a progressive or a conservative idea. These are ideas that simply make sense. We are in the same economic boat. We have the same economic interest. We can't cut our social safety nets because those are our neighbors. Those are our friends. Those are our parents. Those are our children. We can't cut those social safety nets. We need them. And we need them a lot more than we need another freaking corporate tax break. Shaking things up doesn't do a lot of good. But reconsidering and discussing different ideas, not the same old things that we hash out all the time, that's a better way to come up with things. You and I, as two opposite sides of the political aisle, coming together and talking about, that's a great way to figure things out. You know what's not a great way to figure things out? Just taking it with your two hands and shaking the hell out of it.
Have you lost any hope that the GOP can rein Trump in to be more traditional or at least more disciplined as a candidate?
I lost all hope of that probably 7-8 months ago now, quite candidly. It's amazing to me that anybody's still having a discussion about having some sort of an intervention. I think, as Errol just said, this is his message. His message is being a loudmouthed dick, basically, and going out there and offending people and then engaging in a bunch of airing of grievances. That's what he does. He doesn't have another message. He doesn't have anything else that he really wants to convey.
I probably should have warned you about the swear that was in there. My apologies. So we got a Muslim ban recently from the president. And what was interesting is, so on the campaign trail, he mentioned that we were going to do a Muslim ban because these dang gum Muslims from all these terrorist countries, blah, blah. Okay, fine. There have been a few countries that have definitely, we've had people come to our shores from those countries and do us damage. Oh, yes, I will admit to that. We have had people come from countries, you know, Muslim majority countries, and do terrible damage to us. We've had way more people that are born here, from here, and get their guns from here that have done tons more damage to us. But we're talking about Trump here, so we're going to focus on the brown people. Okay, so the countries that we've had people come from, Lebanon, Egypt, the United Arab Emirates, from 1975 to current day, collectively or in aggregate, those three countries, we've had probably 700 people come from those countries that carried out terrorist attacks. Now, mind you, we have 11,000 shootings here in America every year, but that's okay. That's okay. Because that's done by local white people. Okay. Now, Saudi Arabia is an interesting one, too. The 9/11 attackers, the hijackers, they largely came from Saudi Arabia. Those that did not come from Saudi Arabia were actually American citizens. So it was Saudi Arabians and American citizens that carried out that attack. So Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Egypt, and Lebanon. These four countries, it's demonstrable. We had people come from these countries that carried out terrorist attacks. So when Trump issued his Muslim ban, naturally, none of these countries were on his freaking Muslim ban. Iraq, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen were, however, on the list, even though zero, count them, 000 people have ever come from those countries and carried out attacks in the U.S. Now, this doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. And they're trying to say that this is not a Muslim ban, even though on the campaign trail, he called it a Muslim ban. Even though in a tweet early morning last week, he called it a Muslim ban. Even though Sean Spicer, the White House, okay, they've all called it a Muslim ban. Then now there's, this is not a Muslim ban. Why were these four countries omitted? These four or omitted? These four Muslim majority, why were these ones omitted? Lebanon has Trump hotels. Egypt has Trump hotels. The United Arab Emirates has Trump hotels. And Saudi Arabia has Trump hotels. He excluded all of the countries that he's doing business with. The explanation was that this is going to keep us safer. But he didn't include any of the countries that we can demonstrate have exported terrorism before.
According to the law, see, I figured it's something where you put something in his massive trust and there's also nothing. He's written. In other words, in theory, I could be president of the United States and run my business 100%. I hope whoever's writing this story, it's written fairly. The president of the United States is allowed to have whatever conflicts he wants.
The president of the United States is allowed to have whatever conflicts he wants. He decided not to divest from his businesses. His children are in charge of those businesses, and he still directly benefits from it. This is what's known as a conflict of interest. This is the swamp that was filled by Jethro and them from down south recently, and the Republican Party as a whole.
President of the United States is allowed to have whatever conflicts he wants.
And it gets a little bit worse than that. What we learned in this recent week is that Trump is using an unsecured phone. You may not know exactly what that means. Let me explain it to you. When President Obama became, he became president, Senator Obama became President Obama, he was using a BlackBerry that's connected to the internet that does not send out heavily encrypted information. That leaves it vulnerable to attack. when you become the president, you're handed what's called you're handed what's known as a secured phone. And what that means is there's only certain people you can contact with that phone. They're all locked into that phone. You contact them directly with that phone, and that's it. It does not connect to the internet, because once you connect to the internet, you leave yourself open for all kinds of attacks. With the president now using an unsecured phone, whatever he does in that phone could be hacked into. Androids can be hacked into fairly easily if anybody wants to. They can put a keylogger on the phone. They can get into that phone. They can get all the information that is on it, contacts and any and all the rest, any pictures or documents or anything that he may have saved to that phone. If he's doing any official White House business, and he is on his phone, it is vulnerable to attack and hack. This was one of the things that people said that Hillary Clinton should go to jail for. And it gets a little bit worse than that. Most of his closest advisors are using a private server. Quoting here from Daily Coast, it's not just one administration official using a private email server. The whole crew has their own private email server. The good news, though, is that they didn't have to set it up themselves. It's the exact same server that George W. Bush and his crew used for the exact same purpose when federal watchdogs came looking for those missing 22 million emails. Hillary Clinton does it, and it's lock her up, lock her up. Of course, Trump does it, and it's totally cool.
The President of the United States is allowed to have whatever conflicts he wants.
Right. Where the hell have I heard that before?
Well, when the president does it, that means that it is not illegal.
Ah, yes. We're reliving all of the worst parts of history right now.
The situation is worse than it has ever been before. This is the legacy of Hillary Clinton. Death, destruction, terrorism, and weakness.
As soon as he signed the executive order, which implemented his Muslim ban, it immediately ended up in an ISIS propaganda video. ISIS, which has been trying to say for years that the U.S. hates Muslims and that people should join ISIS so that they can attack Americans in the name of Islam. And we've been trying to say, no, 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 such is not the case. Please, work with us to defeat ISIS. Well, he signed that Muslim ban, and he banned all these people from these countries that are trying to escape ISIS right now. He really just sent them right into the arms of ISIS. He made the case for them, and a lot of people are going to die as a result of it. As soon as he signed his Muslim ban, and that's what it is, there were people who all over the country were now stuck in the airports that they landed in. There were people that were coming from other countries that spent years being vetted. And some of them coming here for medical care. At least to this point that we know of, two of them have died in the airports where they landed. I do this every week. I do this show. And I try to appeal to people's humanity. And it starts to feel like that there's not a lot of it out there. The all of the talk about getting rid of Obamacare. Dig this. So prior to the ACA becoming the law of the land, and of course it took a few years to implement, we were losing somewhere between 43 and 45,000 people a year due to lack of access to health care. You know, if they did show up to the hospital, they showed up in the emergency room and they showed up when it was too late. 45,000 people dying every year, just because they don't have access to our private for-profit healthcare system. After Obamacare was implemented, that number dropped to somewhere in the teens. I want to say 15 to 17,000. We're still losing a lot of people, but we brought down our rates of the number of people that were dying because they couldn't get access to healthcare. And that was helpful. That was good to me. So where are we at now? We screamed that we should get rid of Obamacare. We're officially getting rid of Obamacare, and those numbers are going to go back up. Let me put this in perspective for you. The number of people that died every year because they don't have access to health care. Let's go with that 43,000, 45,000 number, right? Which is what it was prior. Think about the trouble that we got ourselves into after 9/11. You know, we got into this 15-year war in Iraq and this 16-year war in Afghanistan, and it was just, we did all these horrible, stupid things that cost trillions of dollars and cost millions of lives. And we did this, and we said we had to do this because we lost 3,000 people. You're talking about 45,000 people, 43,000 people a year. That's like having a 9/11 happen every single month. Every single month. And we're okay with that. We say, oh, that's fine. That's fine. A 9/11 is now happening every month because of the way we decide to handle healthcare. No, that's cool. You know, because at least these health insurance companies are making lots and lots of money. And that's really all we care about. So what did it get down to under Obamacare? Well, maybe we're having a 9/11 every couple of months, which still isn't great, still too many. But think about the outrage, you know, and the passion that came from 9/11 and how there's zero humanity when it comes to how we feel about what the healthcare law has done for either helping people or saving people's lives.
He talks about how he's going to get, well, Goldman Sachs, I know the guys at Goldman Sachs, they have total control over him. Just like they have total control over Hillary Clinton. They have total. But they have no control. They have no control over Donald Trump.
Steve Mnuchin, who it looks like is going to become the next Treasury Secretary, who ran One West Bank and is a Goldman Sachs banker. To right now, and this show will come out, you know, after the Super Bowl. I don't know how many more he will have hired by then. But at this point, Trump has now hired six people that worked for Goldman Sachs. Six people to his administration that used to work at Goldman Sachs. Remember on the campaign trail when that used to be a bad thing? And here's another point where I'm trying to appeal to people's humanity again. Steve Mnuchin is the foreclosure king. That's what they call him. You know, in one of the more egregious stories, he foreclosed on a woman over 27 cents. And he was involved in all kinds of robo-signing for people, you know, pushing them in the mortgages that he knew that they couldn't afford, taking those, bundling those, selling those on the open market, and just making a gutload of money because he's a Goldman Sachs banker. And we all knew that. It was widely reported. And we knew that Goldman Sachs was a terrible, terrible thing. And yet, here he is bringing all these people into his administration that are Goldman Sachs bankers. This from MSNBC. Dina Powell, a Goldman Sachs partner with deep ties to both Republicans and Democrats, is leaving the bank that she's at to join the Trump administration, which will, in a senior role, which she says she will focus on entrepreneurship, economic growth, and the empowerment of women. Blah, 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 blah. So then there's Steve Mnuchin, Trump's choice for Treasury Secretary. Steve Bannon, the chief White House strategist. Gary Cohn, he's been offered the directorship of Trump's National Economic Council. Jay Clayton, Trump's nominee to lead the Securities and Exchange Commission. All of these people, all of them, including White Power, Steve Bannon, they all come from Goldman Sachs. Remember when that used to be considered a bad thing?
You are the problem, politician. You are the problem.
Can I ask you something? Can I ask you something? Out of all of the candidates, name one who had $1 million judgment against him for hiring him.
Name one.
Donald Trump is the only.
Okay,
so
you.
So you like rich people who buy politicians.
Where's your Goldman Sachs jacket at?
Remember when Goldman Sachs was used as an epithet? And how it was one of the things that very likely brought down Ted Cruz. But now that it's Donald Trump, it's okay. It's totally cool. One of the effects of the Muslim ban is going to be this. In Iraq right now, we've got roughly 5,000 soldiers. And I'm not sure if I mentioned this in the past. And right now, they are trying to help the Iraqis retake some of their cities that have been taken by ISIS. And remember, ISIS was born as a direct result of the Iraq war. This is the old Saddam's old bath party. And in those cities, the deal that we've struck with Iraq is this. We say, we're going to help you get back these cities. And we're not going to do it because we're here for your oil. And, you know, and we're not going to do it for any of these, you know, these reasons you may have heard about why we're here. We started the war. We destroyed your country. We killed your people. We can't get you back to where things were. But we can at the very least help protect you and help you get these cities back that have been taken by ISIS. And Iraq has accepted the help. So what happens when Donald Trump says, as he's been saying very openly lately, that we didn't take the oil from Iraq and it's about time that we do so now? Also, we're banning Muslims from America. What do you think that this does around the world? This doesn't just put the people who live in these Muslim-majority countries in danger. This also puts our soldiers in danger because they're standing there and they're helping the Iraqis right now. But on the television, the guy who is the commander-in-chief just said, "We're going to take your freaking oil." That puts them at risk as well. So you're not just going to get these refugees killed. You know, you're not just going to get these immigrants killed. You're not just going to get these brown people in faraway lands killed. You're also going to get our men and women of the armed forces murdered. Because, well, I guess if Donald Trump does it, it's okay. And this is why now Donald Trump is officially considered a threat to human rights.
Why we've ended torture, worked to close Gitmo, reformed our laws governing surveillance to protect privacy and civil liberties. That's why I reject discrimination against Muslim Americans who are just as patriotic as we are.
You know, sometimes I just play clips of the president so I can remember what it was like to have an adult for president. So this from Brooke Siepel over at The Hill. Human Rights Watch is listing President Donald Trump as a threat to human rights. They listed him as a threat when he was president-elect, calling his campaign a vivid illustration of the politics of intolerance. Donald Trump's election as U.S. president after a campaign fomenting hatred and intolerance and the rising influence of political parties in Europe that reject universal rights have put the post-war human rights system at risk, the group said in a statement announcing a new report. The 687-page report analyzes Trump's campaign, pointing to his rhetoric as a cause for worry over human rights violations. Trump's campaign floated proposals that would harm millions of people, including plans to engage in massive deportations of immigrants, to curtail women's rights and media freedoms, and to use torture, all of which he is now saying he's going to do. This, according to Director Kenneth Roth, unless Trump repudiates these proposals, his administration risks committing massive human rights violations in the U.S. and shirking a long-standing bipartisan belief, however imperfectly applied, in a rights-based foreign policy agenda. Human Rights Watch goes on to say that politicians in Europe as well as Trump could lead to tyranny. Trump and various politicians in Europe seek power through appeals to racism, xenophobia, misogyny, and nativism. They all claim that the public accepts violations of human rights as supposedly necessary to secure jobs, avoid cultural change, and to prevent terrorist attacks. In fact, disregard for human rights offers the likeliest route to tyranny. He's not just promising all of these awful things. In the first 10 days of his administration, he has signed 20 executive orders. Remember when that used to be considered tyranny by conservatives? But now it's just getting stuff done.
The disaffection and division that has stalled our progress will only sharpen in years to come. There's a second threat to our democracy, and this one is as old as our nation itself. After my election, there was talk of a post-racial America, and such a vision, however well-intended, was never realistic. Race remains a potent and often divisive force in our society. Now, I've lived long enough to know that race relations are better than they were 10 or 20 or 30 years ago, no matter what some folks say. You can see it not just in statistics. You see it in the attitudes of young Americans.
It would be insane to say that he simply set himself on fire and used nothing but racism in order to get elected. Clearly, there were other messages too. And for a while, it seemed that him and Bernie Sanders were reading off of the same script, which was really interesting to me.
I wanted to describe a candidate to you. The candidate is considered a political outsider by all the pundits. He's tapping into the anger of the voters, delivers a populist message. He believes everyone in the country should have health care. He advocates for hedge fund managers to pay higher taxes. He's drawing thousands of people at his rallies and bringing in a lot of new voters to the political process. And he's not beholden to any super PAC. Who am I describing?
Or any special interests or any donors. You're describing Donald Trump.
Actually, I was describing Bernie Sanders.
Well, that's good.
You were describing Donald Trump. And by the way, it's amazing because the guy seems to only be able to think about himself. You were describing Donald Trump back then. That is most certainly not Donald Trump now. Now he's advocating to strip everybody of their health care. Now he's advocating for more war. Now he has hired six Goldman Sachs bankers to work for his administration. And then, of course, there's that stupid wall.
President-elect Trump tweeted, "For the sake of speed, the U.S. will spend money to build a border wall, with Mexico paying for it later." Counselor Kellyanne Conway says nothing has changed.
Congress is taking it on themselves to explore different options to pay for the wall. But from our perspective, nothing has changed. Obviously, we respect federalism. And if Congress is trying to find different ways to fund this project that is a top priority to President Trump, then they should do that.
Conway was on CBS this morning. Trump never settled on a mechanism for how Mexico will pay for the wall.
Which, by the way, you are going to pay for, which right now it sounds like it's going to be $14 trillion. But quite honestly, that number is expected to go higher. What could we do with $14 trillion? I think we've been over this before.
I know that love will ultimately trump hate.
So now that we have assessed a little bit more about the problem, now that we know a little bit more about what we're facing, let me say that let's start talking about what we can do about it and how we can come together. One of the more surprising things that I've learned lately was that David Brock has now come out and said, you know what, I regret the way things went down during the election. And you know what, Senator Sanders, I am more than ready to work with you. David Brock was not great during the campaign. David Brock runs lots of super PACs. He's friends with lots of billionaires. A quick backstory on David Brock. He runs Media Matters for America, which is one of my favorite sites to pull audio from. Which is a media watchdog group. So right away, Donald Trump does not like him. David Brock used to be a right-wing hitman. He used to work for right-wing media. And he would do character assassinations all the time. And he learned quite a bit about how dirty the GOP is. And he had this, you know, this conscience. And then he got out of it and, you know, came out as gay and all the rest. And now he works for the Democrats, for progressive causes. But he talks about all the time, he's got a book called Blinded by the Right. And he talks about all the time all of the terrible tactics that they use over on that side to fool people and to win in 80 and all the rest. And during the campaign, he was a big time Hillary backer. And he was not real nice when it came to the Bernie Sanders supporters. But he wrote an open letter to Senator Sanders and essentially said, yeah, I need you. Quoting him from his open letter, "It's no secret who I supported. I was one of the most visible and vocal advocates of Secretary Hillary Clinton. Many others backed you, Senator Sanders, with contagious zeal at times. During the Democratic primary, I was criticized for being too aggressive in my support for Secretary Clinton, rightfully so. Looking back, I recognize that there were a few moments when my drive to put Hillary in the White House led me to take too stiff a jab at you. I own up to that, I regret it, and I apologize to you and your supporters for it. With Trump's inauguration, now is the time for us to unite as a party and a progressive movement and put the resentments of the past behind us. Trump's rise to power, fueled by hatred and portending crisis, threatens to eviscerate our constitutional system of government, our nation, as our nation marches closer to Trumpism every day, a path paved with reckless tweets and the normalization of the ugly and absurd. We who reject Trump's bankrupt leadership must heal old wounds, reorient ourselves, and embrace common goals. And if there's one thing on which we can all agree, it's this. We cannot concede any ground, not to the alt-right, not to the Kochs, not to Paul Ryan's establishment, and most of all, not to Donald Trump, our incoming or current, kleptocrat in chief. We must unify in resistance. Senator Sanders, your candidacy electrified millions from students to working class families. You inspired Americans to be more engaged in the political process. We need you to continue to be the voice of reason in a world that has spun out of control. You have consistently devoted yourself to ensuring a free and fair press. In your House days, I remember you being one of the few to attend a congressional hearing about the Fairness Doctrine, where, despite a mostly empty room, you posed thoughtful and penetrating questions. You introduced a bill to restore that doctrine to guard against wildly biased and inaccurate media outlets, and how prescient that concern was. In this past election, we saw the media abdicate its vital public mission, cynically fueling Trump's candidacy for money and ratings. We need you to continue holding the corporate media's feet to the fire. Together, we can resist the predatory billionaires that Donald Trump seeks to install in his cabinet. At the end of the day, we may disagree about Hillary's speeches during her time out of government, but we can't agree that Steve Mnuchin has no right occupying the same office as Alexander Hamilton. While the first priorities are protecting the vulnerable among us and fighting back against Trump, we must also take proactive steps to repair public discourse and vanquish the bottom-feeding organizations that threaten it. Fake news is an existential threat to our democracy that must be addressed with clear-eyed focus. And for the first time in history, we have a minister of disinformation, Steve Bannon. I'd like to include Kellyanne Conway in that. Editorializing here, obviously, who commandoed a vast proto-fascist media empire operating from a plum perch in the West Wing. Breitbart now reeks of state-run media, a dirty trick that the Trump team might have learned from their cozy dealings with the Kremlin. Please join me in reassuring these forces to stop facilitating the pollution of our public discourse. I would also like to add to that Voice of America. Voice of America now has two Trump people, libertarians, running it. And Voice of America used to be considered nonpartisan. Well, it's now his own small private media group that will only put out his talking points. CNN was one of the outlets that did the most normalizing when it came to Donald Trump. Put him on TV anytime he wanted, and no matter what crazy thing he said, well, and I think at some point CNN realized that that's not really the best way to do things. But by then, it was too late, because he was candidate Trump and President Trump. And now, CNN no longer has access to him. They helped put him there, and they no longer have access to them. Fox News is now going to be state-run news, and it's already started. All of the misinformation that he wants put out there, they are very happy to put it out there, and NBC is quickly becoming the new Fox, which is wild to say, because they've got some great progressives that work over there. Rachel Maddow among them, Joy Reid. But Joy Reid, her contract has not been renewed. And I can't imagine she's going to be over there for too much longer. So it appears that that also is going to quickly become state-run news. So what can we do? In the next segment, I want to go ahead and get into Indivisible. The actual things that we can do to fight against the administration. Yeah, I know you feel great going on social media and sitting around and talking with your friends and saying how awful things are. Yeah, bitching seems to be an awful lot of fun, but guess what? It's going to get done. Zip, zilch, nada. Not a damn thing. This man's going to run rampant with all of his white supremacist friends. It's time that we answer that. It's going to require some labor, some work on your part. And although I don't know you personally, pretty certain you're going to be up for it.
Incredible. Bernie Sanders last night in New York City, and Bernie has added one more iconic moment to this campaign. I remember him standing on the back of the pickup truck in New Hampshire with a microphone, looking a lot like Bobby Kennedy, a Bobby Kennedy shot from 68. And then the America ad, and Mike, that last night, just
27,000 people in Washington Square. I mean, forget the polls. Why would he get out? Why would he get out? Drawing that kind of crowd, that kind of enthusiasm.
So two things have come out of the Bernie Sanders campaign. One of them is Our Revolution. You can sign up at OurRevolution.com. And that is directly from Bernie Sanders. And then, of course, there's another group called Indivisible. I, the host of this show, as if I didn't have enough jobs already, I decided to start, for the city that I live in, Vancouver Indivisible Against Hate. You can find it over on Facebook because I decided that it was my turn to run a group. So here's the way it goes. Indivisible, and you can find them at indivisibleguide.com. Indivisible is a group of ex-staffers. And here's the way it goes. After President Obama was elected, a very popular candidate, right, which is not what you can say now about this president, he had an agenda that a lot of people wanted to see implemented and was put in there by a pretty overwhelming margin. But then something happened, something unorganic happened, even though they wanted us to believe that it was organic. The Tea Party popped up. And of course, the Kochs had a lot to do with that because you'd see all these buses going around town that were wrapped with the Tea Party logo and Tea Party hats and shirts and all the rest. And they spent all of their time either showing up to town halls and shouting at members of Congress or calling their congressmen and women and telling them to fight every single aspect of the Obama agenda. They took a very popular president and his very popular agenda, and they stopped it almost completely in its tracks. So we can do something similar, except we've got a little bit of a head start, a couple of things. We don't have an AstroTurf group. We've got actual grassroots groups that are popping up all over the place. All of these demonstrations that are happening right now, as much as they want to say over on Fox News and Breitbart and all the rest, that these people are being paid by left-wing billionaires. No, they're not. They're showing up because they're pissed. They don't like racism. They don't like misogyny. And they don't like the new guy. That road cone covered in raw sewage. They do not like that guy. And they're showing up all over the place. So we have an unpopular president with an unpopular agenda. And we've got a lot of motivated people. And you can go to indivisibleguide.com, punch in search for a local group, punch in your zip code, and it will tell you all of the groups in your particular area. In the area I live in, my group is one of five. And what are we doing in my group? So whenever a bill is going to be passed or it's going to be voted on, you know, or something, you know, that... And here's the way it goes. You have to talk to your individual member of Congress. Everyone's got three. You've got your House member. Do you know their name? You've got two senators. Do you know their names? And those three members have two separate offices that you're allowed to call. That's their DC office and their local office. And you can call both. Now, and here's what you do. And I understand that most people have probably never called a member of Congress before. And it can seem a little bit intimidating. I haven't had a chance. I've called mine, but I haven't had a chance to record the phone calls. That's coming, and I will play it here on the show because I really do want to encourage you to do this. Because all of the fighting and bickering that we do online, the conversations that we have with that one nitwit in Kentucky, it's not doing anything. And not just that, you're not changing that nitwit's mind. But you're a member of Congress. They would prefer to not hear from you. They would prefer you not pay attention to what they're doing. They would very quietly like to take their private campaign contributions and just live high on the hog, and you continue voting for them no matter what. But you have to call them. So you call them, give them your name. You don't got to give me your first and last. Just give me your first name. Hi, my name is Melvin. I'm from zip code 90210 or whatever it is. And then you say, my concern is this, and be respectful. You have to be nice. If you're a jerk, they're just going to hang up to you. They're not going to write down anything you say. Call up and be respectful. Don't do what the Tea Party did. What they did was effective, but we can do this and still keep our dignity about us. Give them your concern. Give them your question. Tell them that you would like a response from your individual member of Congress. Please, either written or a phone call back from a staffer or something. You would like a response. And you can call every day if you want. You can call several times a day if you want. But every time you call, make sure that you stick to one subject. Okay, you tell them what you think. You'd like to hear back. If you want to hang up and call back in 10 minutes, fine. But one subject every time. And unfortunately, what's going to have to happen? Because of Trump being in the White House and Republicans having control of both houses of Congress, the most that we can hope to do is slow things down. And the fact that he's ruling by executive order with 20 orders in 10 days, anytime he wants something, he just sits down, he signs his name to it, and all of a sudden it just causes absolute chaos. We have to play defense. And I know you probably don't like the idea of playing purely defense, but it's not likely that we're going to get any progressive legislation passed. But if you put fear in your member of Congress, if they start hearing from you, especially if they've never heard from you before, if they start hearing from you a lot, where they get to know you by your first name, does your congressman know you by name? My congressman knows me by mine. And I don't think she probably appreciates getting phone calls from me. The first time I called her office, I actually got blown off. One of her staffers gave me another number to call. And when I called that other number, nothing happened. So I got in touch with my local Democratic Party and they said, they blew you off. It's not that other number. Call that original number. And what they're doing is unethical. They're trying to, because they don't want to hear from you. What did I call about? My congressional member, my House member, Jamie Herrera Butler, is quiet about whether she thinks that Trump has voted or if Trump believes or she believes like Trump does that there are 3 million people that voted illegally. And I said, no, you don't get to be silent on that because it's not real. So I called the office to ask, what else am I calling about? Are you for the repeal of Obamacare? Do you understand that it's going to lead to the millions, tens of millions of people losing their health care and tens of thousands of people dying every year? Are you familiar with, do you consider yourself pro-life because she is a Republican? These are the things that you say when you call. And, of course, they will hold town halls. And when they hold town halls, that's where you get to shine. Well, this is certainly where Melvin gets to shine because the town halls are generally just an open forum. She'll stand up. You know, your member of Congress will stand up, they'll say a few things, and then they'll open the floor to questions. Have your question ready. If you're going to have a sign, fine, but remember, be respectful, and if your sign says something awful, you're probably not going to get picked. So you might not want to do the whole sign thing, but you're more than welcome to do it if you want, but it may diminish some of the effectiveness of your visit. Stand up very sternly, ask a question, and don't let them skate. I know this is a lot. It's a ton of work. I'm asking you to call. I'm asking you to show up, but it's really the only thing you can do. You can write a letter to your member of Congress, but trust me, it's going to go in the circular file. They don't care. You can have your dumb little arguments on social media with people who disagree, but it's not going to go anywhere. It's not going to do any good. You have to show up and you have to make phone calls.
The truth is, actually, I am worried about the Republican Party. And I know that sounds, you know what it sounds like. But,
yeah.
But democracy works, this country works, when you have two parties that are serious and trying to solve problems, and they got philosophical differences and they have fierce debates and they argue and they contest elections, but at the end of the day what you want is a healthy two-party system. And you want the Republican nominee to be somebody who could do the job if they win, and you want folks who understand the issues and where you can sit across the table from them and you have a principled argument and ultimately can still move the country forward. So I actually am not enjoying, and I haven't been enjoying over the last 7 years, watching some of the things that have happened in the Republican Party.
Millionaires and billionaires who wanted their agenda pushed put together something called the Concord Project, and they got a lot of well-meaning people to do their bidding for them. These videos are still available on YouTube. And I pulled some audio from them because I want you to hear the things that were being said in these videos. And these don't just apply to Republicans. These apply to you as well.
What's the most powerful political office in the world? It is not the President of the United States. It's precinct committeemen. Why? There's three main reasons. First, because precinct committeemen and only precinct committeemen get to elect the leaders of the political parties. If you want to elect the leadership of one of the two major political parties in this country, then you have to become a precinct committeeman.
This goes for you, too. If you call your member of Congress, that's great. That's a fantastic start. If that's all you, and you vote, that's okay. If you can do more, then you should show up. Show up when they have town hall meetings. That's also going to be great. But if you want to get inside the party, and most districts in the United States, this sounds unbelievable, but it's certainly true in red states. Most districts in the United States do not have a Democratic office. They don't have a local Democratic party. It's all Republicans. And they run all, and so Republicans, Republican voters, they get this terrible idea about government, but there's nobody progressive around in their town, no offices or organizations or anything like that. And so if you want to get involved, you can start one in your town. I know that's a heavy lift. I don't expect that you can definitely do it, but if you could, or if there's already one established, look around, punch in your city's name and Democratic Party or Republican Party, if that's the way you swing, and see if there's a local organization in your town. If there is, show up and get involved. And there you can speak. You don't even have to wait for your local member of Congress to put together a town hall. You can go to that thing and you can speak, right? And if you really want to get involved, become a precinct committee person.
Second, precinct committeemen and only precinct committeemen can vote in internal party elections to endorse candidates in the all-important, traditionally very low turnout primary elections. If a candidate wants to win the general election, he first has to get onto the general election ballot. To get on the general election ballot, he has to win the primary election. And the best way to win the primary election is to get the endorsement of as many party committees as possible. Precinct committeemen are organized into committees. For example, every county has a party committee. Every state legislative district has a committee. Legislative districts elect the people's representatives to the state legislature.
The Concord Project, that's what these videos were called. Tea Partiers would watch these videos. They would show up to do these things, show up to their local Republican Party, become precinct committeemen. They would pick horrible, horrible candidates that would end up on the ballot. And after those horrible candidates would end up on the ballot, the Kochs would put money behind them. Kochs put money behind them, they get into Congress, and they end up not doing your work. They end up not representing you in Congress. But then the Kochs shovel a little bit more money at them to defend the awful things that they're doing. And all of this happened right under your nose and without your say-so. My hope, if nothing else, that comes out of this horrible election and this horrible excuse for a human being that we have to call president now. My hope is that this is where people will start getting involved. This is where people will start coming together. And this is where people will finally put their foot down and say, dang gummit, no more.
You want to become a precinct committeeman is because in some states, when a vacancy occurs in a state legislator office, precinct committeemen and only precinct committeemen, not registered voters, get to nominate three nominees to fill the vacancy. The County Board of Supervisors then select the replacement. If, under a system like this, a majority of the precinct committeemen are conservatives, then all three nominees will be conservatives and the eventually selected replacement will be a conservative. That's real political power.
You have more power than you know. You have more power than you realize. And it's really easy for us to say, man, it's not me. I can't do it. But have you ever thought about running for Congress? Now, I know this relationship is moving very quickly here. Let me move back. Call your congressman. Just plug in your zip code. Find out who they are. Contact their office with one of your concerns. Find out who you're dealing with. Find out if they are of your political stripe. Find out if they do have your best interest at heart. Find out if there is something that they would be willing to do for you, to represent you in Congress. Start there. Just start there. Maybe move on to some of these other steps. You know, don't call your senators. This show And like I said, so much of what happens with regard to politics is folks just standing around and having a bitch session. And of course, at times on this show, it is my unfortunate duty brought upon me by myself that I have to deliver not so good news. But it never does any good to just sit around and piss and moan. It does absolutely nothing. Your arguments online do nothing. Being upset, just it does nothing. But these are real things. I've demonstrated, I pointed out here today, these are real things that you can do to affect change. We don't have to sit back while this racist, misogynistic president runs the country, right? And just leaves people out in the cold and strips people of their health care and gets away with sexual assault. We don't have to stand by while that happens. Unless, of course, you're cool with that. Unless, of course, you do want to stand by. But Melvin, I don't think I can do it.
The world might say you are not allowed to yet. I waited a long time out in the world before I gave myself permission to fail. Please, don't even bother asking. Don't bother telling the world you are ready. Show it. Do it. What did Beckett say? Ever tried, ever failed. No matter. Try again. Fail again. Fail better.
You can do this. I know you can do this. I don't know who you are at the other end of this line, listening to me right now. But I know you can do this. And if you're listening to this show, there's a pretty solid chance that you're upset as well. There's a pretty solid chance that you're not a racist and that you're not a homophobe and that you're not okay with sexual assault and that you're not okay with the bankers that crashed the economy back in 2008 working in the White House. You gotta be, because those are the kind of things that I point out on this show, and you're probably a little scared. Don't be. These people work for you. You're paying them hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars a year as a citizen to do all of these awful things in your name. It's about time they learned who you are. It's about time they heard from you. And it's about time that they start doing something that is in your and your countrymen's best interest. You can do this. I believe in you. Now go get them. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here with me on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. I know I'm giggling. I just love doing the show. I have so much fun with it. I love putting this information out there. I hope you enjoy absorbing it. Back into my script. Like us on Facebook.com. It's Facebook.com/TFYCPO. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or at the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available at the iTunes Store. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out. There you could also subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, or hate mail, or just a general statement or inquiry, you can email us at TFYCPO@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are The Fire You Can't Put Out. We will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing. Special thanks to you for listening. This is Melvin signing off. You've got work to do. Go on now. Now that I've woken you up, good morning.